And for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about what you need to know about making it through this flu season, the aches, the shakes, the fever. Maybe you won't have to go through all of that. Also, we're going to talk about something, you know that's true, but you can't explain it. Like, we all know in our guts, so to speak, that the flu is always worse in the wintertime, right? But you've always heard over the years doctors tried to explain it away, saying, well, you're in more closer proximity in the wintertime. People are not outdoors. They cough on each other, that sort of thing. Well, there is actually a new study out that solves this mystery, and some new information about also another study about whether flu shots help prevent the flu in senior citizens as much as we expect them to. We're all telling senior citizens to get flu shots. Do they really work? That's what we're going to be talking about for the rest of the hour. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, talking about the upcoming flu season and this new information about the flu. Bringing back our guest, William Schaffner, Vice President of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. And joining us now is Peter Polisi, a Horace W. Goldsmith Professor and Chair of the Department of Microbiology, Professor in the Department of Medicine at Mount Sinai School of Medicine here in New York. He joins us today from our office there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Polisi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How are you doing this afternoon?
Okay, great.
Let's talk about, Dr. Schaffner, about the flu. We haven't really heard about a vaccine shortage, Dr. Schaffner, this year. Is there going to be one?
Well, you can hear me knocking wood. So far, not. In fact, this year, the manufacturers tell us that they will be providing more influenza vaccine, over 130 million doses, than they ever have before. So now the job is to get that influenza vaccine out of the refrigerator and into people so it can prevent influenza.
Are we using the same guidelines about who should be getting the flu shot this year?
Actually, we're starting out, because we have so much, by saying anyone who wishes to prevent influenza in themselves and who does not want to give it to their loved ones and colleagues at work, go ahead and get your influenza vaccine. And then, of course, we provide special guidance for those who really should get it. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to talk about that.
All right. We will talk about it. We're going to take a short break and talk about the flu season this year. If you have questions about the flu, its spread, stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. We're talking about the flu season this year with William Schaffner of Vanderbilt University and Peter Polisi of Mount Sinai School of Medicine here in New York, our number 1-800-989-8255. And Dr. Schaffner, you were saying there's so much flu shot available that just about everybody should get one?
Absolutely. We're actually going to have a bit of a difficulty in using all the influenza vaccine that we deliver. So we're being especially strong in our recommendations that and accepting that people come in and get their influenza vaccine. You can't go wrong by doing that.
Let me ask you, Dr. Polisi, to talk about a really interesting study that has to do with about how the flu virus spreads. You show why winter is the perfect time for the flu to flourish. Let's just talk about what we know. The flu does happen seasonally, right?
Yes, so we know from many studies that in the Northern Hemisphere, the influenza virus season starts around November, December, and then goes March. So there is really a seasonality, which is during the winter months. And on the Southern Hemisphere, obviously, they have it around July, August. Mm-hmm. And that has been known for quite some time.
And we've always assumed it's because people are indoor crowding during cold weather, or there's seasonal fluctuations in our immune response, all kinds of things. But you narrowed it down to something very concrete.
Yes. So we wanted to study this. Obviously, in humans, this is very difficult to study to get the numbers. So one tries always to have an animal model. And clearly, if we talk about an animal model, there's the old saying, mice are not men, and in our case, guinea pigs are not humans. But we were able to show that guinea pigs are an ideal system to really study transmission. And so what we are doing is we infect an animal, a guinea pig, and actually more than that, put them into a cage, and then we have about a foot away uninfected animals. And we study what are the parameters, particularly temperature and relative humidity, what are the parameters which influence the transmission from the infected animals, guinea pigs, to the uninfected, which were 3 feet apart.
Mm-hmm. And?
And we found something very interesting, that at cold temperature, 5 degrees centigrade, we have a much longer shedding of the virus in those animals, which are kept a week in an environmental chamber, which is kept at 5 degrees. So that was the first interesting finding. And the second was that the transmission is much better at this lower temperature 5 degrees, as compared to room temperature, or if we go to 30 degrees temperature, there is absolutely no transmission in this animal guinea pig system.
Yeah, wait, let me just stop you there. 5 degrees is around 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Approximately, correct.
There is great transmission. And then you go up to 30 degrees, which is about, 90-something?
Maybe, yes.
90 degrees, it's stops?
It stops. We have not been able to see transmission under those circumstances. If we put the animal into the same cage where they can lick each other and do whatever they do, then you get transmission. But not if it is an aerosol transmission, which is probably a large part of how we get flu, is through the air. It is not through shaking hands.
And you say that the humidity is also...
And in addition, we found that low humidity at room temperature as well as at lower temperature, around 40 degrees, is really also a factor which increases transmission. At the 30 degree, 90 degrees about Fahrenheit, we don't see, even at low humidity, we don't see any transmission. But what we can say is low temperature and low humidity is conducive to a transmission by influenza.
And that's perfect cold weather, winter season condition.
Correct.
Would it then be advisable for doctors' waiting rooms to be kept at high humidity? Keep it hot in there so that the people are not spreading it out?
I mean, again, I think we should be careful that these are, I think, very good animal studies, which we have done. Mm. But it probably has to wait that we can get for confirmation in humans. But I think if I would be very convinced that indeed higher temperature and high humidity would be a good way to go in terms of preventing transmission in movie theaters, in old age homes, in situations where we have more people together who might be sick with influenza. So this is only for influenza. Let me stress that.
Uh-huh.
Other viruses, such as the common cold, they are very well transmitted by shaking hands, rubbing your eyes, etc. So we are talking here about influenza transmission only.
Glad you quantified that. Dr. Schaffner, what's your take on this?
Well, I think Dr. Pelezi's lovely studies, and boy, are they neat. Isn't science great? Urge us all to go to the Bahamas in the winter. But failing that, I think we ought to get vaccinated. But more seriously...
I agree with you, Dr. Schaffner.
We'll go together.
I agree in terms of not going down to the... It's great to go down to the Bahamas, but I agree with you with vaccination. That's what I mean.
But wasn't there a study out this week, and I'm just the tip of my tongue here because I don't have with me Dr. Schaffner, that said something about senior citizens who get vaccinated, the rate of protection is not as high as we thought it would be?
Well, there have been kind of dueling studies that have come out recently, and if our expectations for what influenza does in people over age 65 can be exaggerated. The more precisely we measure this, if we know who's vaccinated and who's not, and Kristen Nichols' study that came out in the New England Journal recently did such an elegant study. She was able to show over 10 influenza seasons, she knew exactly who was vaccinated and who was not, that there was an average reduction of 27% in the risk of hospitalization for pneumonia or influenza during completely safe intervention. And so that's why Dr. Polizzi and I both strongly recommend influenza vaccination. It's not perfect. It will not prevent every case, but boy, oh boy, it surely does reduce your risk of the complications, even if you're older and frail.
I have a question here from Second Life. Margo Llewellyn asks, I've heard that the flu shot has a cumulative benefit, accumulates, that you are guarded against that strain for life, and if you get the shot every year, the more resistance to the flu you have. Is that right?
Not quite. The influenza virus is very flexible. It changes its genetic makeup, and so that's why we have to create a new influenza vaccine each year in anticipation of the actual strain that comes along. Surely there's some cumulative protection, but we really do have to get vaccinated with the current vaccine each year in anticipation of what will be going around.
To the phones. Jennifer in New York, New York. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I have a question. I've never had a flu shot, and I don't think I've had the flu, at least not in my maybe last 20 years of adult life. And I'm wondering if I should get a flu shot. It seems kind of silly. And I also think that I must, that maybe my immune system is stronger in some way. It just seems crazy to get a flu shot if I don't get the flu. I'm in New York.
How hot is your living room?
Well, I'm sorry to say it is extremely humid almost all the time. It drives me crazy. But this is New York.
Yeah, well, let me get an answer from my doctors. Dr. Schaffner, some people obviously must have more immunity than others, right?
Well, Jennifer sounds like an otherwise healthy, relatively young adult.
No, I'm actually 66.
Well, you clearly ought to be vaccinated, but nonetheless, you sound very healthy. You've been infected with influenza and have had milder variants of that illness, but as we all get older, we're more subject to the complications of influenza. And another thing, by getting vaccinated, even if we get a mild case, we won't be able to transmit it to those whom we love. So there's a dual purpose of being vaccinated, protecting yourself as well as those around
you. So you spread the vaccine to other people?
Excuse me.
No, not the vaccine.
No, the flu.
The flu. So
well, I mean the effects of the immunity, I guess, is what I should have said.
By being protected, you won't get infected yourself, and you won't infect others with the real virus.
I see what you're saying. Okay, Jennifer, you going to get one now?
Yeah.
Jennifer, let me
I think it's going to weaken me. I'm like
no,
an antibiotic.
No.
Your logic is
of.
If it ain't busted, don't fix it.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jennifer, I always say, if you want to get sick, then don't take the vaccine.
What about if I wash my hands? I do that a lot.
I'm not. This is one of the, fallacies here that washing hands, I mean, I'm not against washing hands, understand me right. The influenza is really transmitted through the air so that you can wash all your hands and you still will get infected. And what I think is important, you may have many what we call aclinical or subclinical infections so that you really don't get as sick as you think you should be with a real influenza. But nevertheless, you are infected and you may transmit it. And you are a young 60-year-old, but I think if as we get older, we really become much more susceptible to serious influenza, and not taking the vaccine, I think, is probably not a wise decision.
All right.
Well, you see, we're singing in harmony, Peter.
I guess. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jennifer. Have a good weekend. 1-800-989-8255. Why is it? I'm fascinated about why the common cold is transmitted by the hands, but the flu has to go through the air.
That's a good question, and we really don't know the answer. we really don't know the answer of that. But it is a fact that one can really transmit. It's a completely different family of viruses which causes the common cold.
Gotcha.
But they, I think, washing of hands, not touching your nose, touching your mouth, touching your eyes, I think is would be very, very helpful. And, for example, masks which are carried in Asian countries frequently, some of the benefit is really that people just don't touch their face, you know, rather than that it prevents inhaling something.
1-800-989-8255. We're talking about the flu this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News with Drs. William Schaffner and Peter Polizzi. Let me ask you, Dr. Schaffner, if you miss October, November getting your shot, are you done? Have you missed out getting that protection for the rest of the year?
Eric, very good question. The short answer is no. Most of the time, influenza in the United States peaks in February. It can start earlier and go later. But mind you, if it peaks in February, you can still get vaccinated in December and even into January. So we're urging the public, as well as all those healthcare providers, keep getting vaccine, keep giving vaccine beyond Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Give thanks that you can still get vaccine.
Do birds spread the human flu?
Maybe I take that one. Not in general. As we have heard, there is the avian influenza H5, which is a particular type, H standing for hemagglutinin. And very rarely do humans get infected and can die. But even though this is sort of a worrisome event, I would submit that this occurs when large doses of virus get transmitted to humans from chicken mostly. So in other words, if someone sleeps with a chicken in the same room where the opportunities are for large numbers, I mean literally millions of infectious virus particles infecting the human, then those very rare instances really lead to disease and sometimes to death. Mm-hmm. But in general, we are not getting infected from animals in terms of influenza.
Does your research on how influenza viruses work suggest a way to make a better vaccine?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We in the laboratory, we have wonderful technologies now to really improve vaccines. As Dr. Schaffner has said, I mean, we all should get vaccinated, but there is room for improvement, and there is a new vaccine, for example, a live virus, which is just sprayed into the nose. That is an advance, and I think there is in the laboratory, we have new approaches, new second and third generation vaccines, which should be much better in the future. Mm.
I have one last comment. It actually comes in the form of a question or a comment from Second Life. Nemu from Alaska says, at our clinic, we have already started seeing flu cases and have an ongoing flu clinic. Unfortunately, we are unable to get any children's vaccines, and so we are pushing nutrition and cleanliness for adults and children at all schools. So somebody's not getting the vaccine.
There's a problem in delivery. There's plenty of vaccine out there, children and adults. They need to make a few phone calls to their distributors. They'll have influenza vaccine to them just lickety-split.
And what should you expect to pay for a flu shot?
About $15. And most medical insurance actually covers influenza vaccine.
Hmm.
So, and Medicare does also. So most people really don't have to pay very much for influenza vaccine.
All right, you've got the last word. Thank you very much, Dr. Schaffner.
Thank you, Ira, and thank you, Peter.
William Schaffner is Vice President of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, Professor and Chair of the Department of Preventive Medicine at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville. Peter Polizzi is the Horace W. Goldsmith Professor and Chair of the Department of Microbiology, Professor in the Department of Medicine at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. Gentlemen, have a good weekend. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you.
Cheerio.
Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Kim Molesky. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we're podcasting and new videos, looking for your videos. There's still people milling around at science school in Second Life if you'd like to talk to them about our Science Friday program. It's streamed over there in Second Life, and people are asking questions. Also, you can surf over to Science Friday's Kids Connection. We have still teaching materials up there from all of our past years of Science Friday. Have a great weekend. Get your flu shot. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.